The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
God is a solution. God is a 12-step.
I like where he's going here.
Helps the community grow, helps us grow. Bonnie has done a phenomenal job. And you're talking about taking people through a spiritual process, getting them into recovery.
Thanks, Monty, and thanks for all your support.
We need spirituality to make this thing work long-term.
It's an absolute pleasure. You certainly know a lot of people.
This is one of the places that is about the business of the solution.
And now, broadcasting on location somewhere in the vast expanse of the Pacific Northwest, it's the over-opinionated 12-stepologist, the Monty Man.
That's right. Okie dokie. Well, welcome aboard one and all to another episode of the world's oldest and original recovery talk and positive music radio station and podcast. We have a favor to ask of you. Before we do that, maybe I should say who I am. For those of you who have never met me, you're in for a... I won't say it. Hello. I am your host, the Monty Man. And with me is Roger McDermott from Huntington Beach, California. And if you're watching on YouTube, you will see that very attractive young lady there. That is Donna Marston. She is our special and featured guest for this episode. We're going to be talking about what she talks about here in just a minute. But the favor I need to ask of you listeners, listen, when I check our download numbers that Podomatic sends me every week, I'm blown away. I mean, it's just thousands and thousands of people are downloading, and we appreciate that very much. But I need you to do me something else, another favor too. If you go on YouTube, like it, subscribe it, share it. Like it, subscribe it, share it. 3 points, right? When you do that, it helps with our analytics because we don't get a whole lot of feedback on YouTube because it's kind of old school. Most people are listening to this show in their car or while they're jogging or eating a donut or whatever they do. Most people don't watch on screen as much as they used to. So if you're on YouTube, please like, subscribe, and share. Also, if you're on other podcasting networks like PodAddict or Podbeam or Apple or Google, by the way, Google Podcast is going away. It's becoming something else, and we'll update you on that. But please like and share those as well. And if you have the ability to comment, we'd really appreciate your comments, even if it's like, not a fan of that episode. That's right. We want to know that. Interact with us, if you would. And if you need help in doing any of that, please send me an email at take12radio@comcast.net. And we'll do that. All right. So,
Excuse me, Monty Man. Excuse me. But it's that very important part of the show where you talk about one of those silly things that is spoken of in meetings sometimes.
Yes.
So take it away, Monty Man, with the silly thing.
Thank you, Cecil. All right, silly thing and number 3. Last week, silly thing number 2 was Meeting Makers Make It, a silly thing heard in meetings. And the week before that was AA is a Selfish Program. That was number 1 silly thing. This is number 3. Don't drink and go to meetings. Just don't drink and go to meetings. So the saying reminds us of the proverbial lawyer who tells clients that bankruptcy is unnecessary. Just pay your bills. One may as well advise a homeless person to buy a house. In fact, we already assume that every AA member actually wants to stop drinking or drugging. We're also happy to see them at meetings and hope their attendance continues for the reasons mentioned. We're just not certain how any newcomer can ever be expected to follow this advice. The Big Book suggests that if anyone unable to control his drinking can do the right about face and handle his liquor, then our hats are off to him. We too are happy for him. He's probably not an alcoholic and doesn't need AA. Telling the newcomer, don't drink, that's all you got to do, also sounds eerily like just say no. Alcoholics and addicts are incapable of doing this by themselves. The 12 steps are not written for those who can stop, but for those who can't quit, no matter how much they wish or how hard they try. It is only by working the program that we have a spiritual awakening and personality change sufficient to bring about a state of recovery. With this personality change, our sanity is restored. Then and only then can we do things like just say no. Yeah, there you go. There's silly thing number three. Don't drink and go to meetings. What do you think, Roger?
I think that is absolutely silly. Why would we need meetings if we could just not drink?
There you go.
Yeah, it's about living life on life's terms, not just not drinking. Drinking wasn't my problem anyway. It was my solution to all my problems.
Yes, amen. It's just a symptom, right? So there. What do you think, Donna? As our guest, what do you think of that? Do you think that's a silly thing, or do you think that's sound advice? Just don't drink and go to meetings.
So, well, I'm sure it's sound advice, but I'm not a member of AA. So.
Right. Well, that's fine. A lot of our listeners aren't.
Okay. So my understanding is it's the desire not to drink. Is that correct?
Yes. Sure. And very well said, because we have the desire not to, but for some reason we haven't been able to put the plug in the jug. And so for someone to just say, well, just stop it. Right. It's kind of like, and we're going to be talking about shame here in a minute, but it's kind of like telling somebody, well, just don't feel that way.
Right.
Right. It's like, if I could just not feel that way, we wouldn't even be having this discussion. All right. That was silly thing number three. I know we'll have more as the weeks go on. And there you go. We'll be right back.
I'm not prepared to pursue my line of inquiry any further, as I think this is getting too silly.
Quite agree, quite agree. Silly, silly, silly. Right. Get on with it. Get on with it.
We'll be right back.
Shame on you for doing me like you do. You saw me yesterday.
Do you ever feel stuck in your recovery? I mean, we all have felt stagnant from time to time. I'd like to introduce you to the book, 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety, Getting Your Recovery Unstuck, by our good friend and recovery author, Dr. Alan Berger. Dr. Berger has helped to change the lives of thousands of individuals with his work on emotional sobriety, paving a new path to recovery for both the addict and their families. For your autographed copy of 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety, visit abphd.com. This book is also available on Amazon.
This is Tom Williams
and Alicia Martinez, and we'd like to invite you to join us every Tuesday right here at take12radio.com for the Came to Believe Recovery podcast.
Topics will include a deep look into the how and why the 12-step movement was so successful in the past and how it can experience that success again today.
You can catch up on all our episodes at take12radio.com by clicking on the Came to Believe Recovery podcast banner.
Hey, this is Dale Barker, legacy leader at Came to Believe Recovery, and you're listening to Recovery Talk and Positive Music at Take 12 Recovery Radio.
Shame, shame on you. Shame, shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
Took my car and my money. Done me wrong and that ain't funny. Woe is me. Shame on you.
Yeah, there you go. Welcome back to the show. You've tuned in to the Take 12 Recovery Radio Show. I'm your host, the Monty Man. Roger McDermott is on the line with us, as well as our special guest. Just to give credit where credit's due, the opening song, Shame, Shame, Shame by Shirley and Company. And then, of course, this one, Spade Cooley. And then we have a little Fats Domino going on there. A lot of, you know, when I was looking for this stuff, there's a lot of music that is based around shame, not necessarily entitled Shame, but there are some entitled Shame too. But, and I started listening, Don, I started listening to lyrics. There is a lot of shame based stuff feeding our head. And I want to talk about that a little bit today. But listeners, I want to introduce you to our guest. She's a mother who intimately understands the challenges of loving a child in active addiction. Donna's heart was shattered, grappling with the desperate need to save her son. She says, I was full of fear. I felt helpless and hopeless. I learned a profound lesson. Love alone couldn't guide my son to recovery. Donna's poignant journey unveils the struggles, resilience, and ultimately the transformative wisdom she gained through navigating the complexities of addiction in her family. My guest is the author of Healing Without Shame Journal, Just for Today, Peeling the Onion, and Sharing Without Shame. Donna's credentials and certifications are lengthy, and they include acupuncture detoxification. I love acupuncture. I absolutely love it. Certified recovery support worker, Governor's Commission on Alcohol and Drug Abuse Recovery Task Force, harm reduction trainer, intuitive energy healer, mental health first aid trainer, NAMI-trained parent, family support facilitator. We would be here all day if I read everything that she is certified and has certificates for. Very impressive. And certainly her own personal experience. And I had the pleasure and honor, listeners, of being a guest on her show, Sharing Without Shame, her podcast. And I enjoyed it so much, I really wanted to have her on our show, too. So, Donna Marston, welcome to Take 12 Recovery Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, this is fun. You've been through some painful stuff, no?
I have, yes.
Yeah. And you live to tell about it. There you are, with a smile on your face.
I am. Yeah. Back in the day, I thought for sure if I didn't die from a broken heart, I was going to end up in some psych ward. And it took a long time to get me out of the fetal position so I could start living my life again.
So you put a lot of emphasis on this word shame and really surviving it, right? Mm-hmm. So did you heap shame upon yourself when you were going through this stuff with your family?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I blamed myself. It must've been my problem. I must've done something wrong. I'm the mother. I'm supposed to do everything right. I didn't raise my son to fall into the lifestyle that he did. But then, you know, it was back in the day when I got out of the fetal position. It was a day where I needed to go into an IOP with him. And I realized what was going on and the shame, the immense shame that I felt as a parent, as a mother. And, you know, just, it was awful because people shame and blame you. The things that people say to you on the outside, that is so hurtful and so critical and so judgmental.
Yeah.
For me, it brought me to my knees.
Even unintentionally, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'll say things. I remember we were, there was a gal in our church that hosted a Narcotics Anonymous meeting for years. And this is where we met her. And she was a 30-day wonder. She'd get 30 days and she'd relapse 30 days. And this went on for a couple of years. And one day or 1 year, she got 90 days. It was like, I mean, we just loved on this guy. She's just a sweetheart, right? So we decided that we were going to throw a little party for her over at our house, which is right across the street. And we made a big banner, you know, congratulations on your 90 days. And this well-meaning pastor's wife, I mean, I say she's well-meaning because she didn't know what she was saying. She went, oh, 90 days? Oh, that's all? Oh, and I felt, I felt the knife go in my chest that was going in hers. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, she weathered that better than I did. I wanted to jump in and protect her, you know, but the way she responded was, it was something to the, well, let's have cake or something like that. You know what I mean? But people, they don't know, I guess, what they don't know, and they mean well, but they can really tear you down, right?
Sure. You know, I had a mother, she had called me for some help because I do coaching, and I always tell my story. I always talk about my side of it, because I'm not going to sit and point fingers and go, you need to do this.
Right.
So I tell my story as a way to, you know, navigate through it. And her son, what she knew was alcoholism. And she stopped me and said, my son isn't like yours. Now that's shaming.
Wow.
Right. Because she considered alcohol different than, you know, drug addiction.
Sure.
And a drug is a drug. Alcohol is also a drug.
Right.
But in her mind, it was very different. And so, you know, it's stuff like that. And I've had people say, you know, I'm glad my kids don't do what your son did, or, you know, I was at, so I did a lot of advocating at the state level in New Hampshire. And so we were in chamber, and the senator kept asking, is marijuana, which now you're supposed to call it cannabis because that's the proper language. And kept saying, is cannabis the gateway drug? Mm-hmm. And this attorney, local attorney, got up, and I'm two rows behind, and said, no, it's bad parenting.
Really?
Wow. And the people in the front rows were advocates at this organization that I advocated for. And they all turned around with like horror, like, Donna, don't.
Yeah.
and you know, the thing is, I could have been a real jerk that day.
Yeah.
And I could have walked by him and said, oh, by the way, your daughter's been shooting up with my son. But that's not how I roll, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't know. But yeah, bad parenting.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, hands-on parent. I was a stay-at-home mother. I was a den mother. Dinner was on the table at 5. I tucked my boys in every night and read them a story. Sure. Were we perfect? Absolutely not, because nobody is. However, I took my job as a mom real serious, and I did the best I could.
Yeah. Yeah. And we know, don't we, Roger? I mean, you can... In my case, with my alcoholism, I wasn't raised on the toilet backwards or any silly thing like that. You know, my parents did the best they could. I was an only child, so there was a lot of stigma there, right? Especially back then. And they were amazing parents. Mm-hmm. There was not one thing, even through therapy and everything else, there was not one thing that they did that contributed at all to my abusing alcohol. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was adopted. It was a closed adoption. We suspected there might be some genetics involved there, but nothing my birth parents did. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I just have an allergic reaction to alcohol. When I put it in my body, I do stupid drunk stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, and my son, he started cause he was bullied in sixth grade. And so we ended up putting him in a private school, and there was a lot more money, so there was a lot more available to him, and that's where it all started.
Mm.
And you know, and then he came back he ended up getting kicked out because he got arrested, and they were so unforgiving. He wasn't found guilty, but they kicked him out. So he went back to public school, and that's, he goes, Mom, those are the kids I wanted to fit in with, and they were all using. So he did
sure.
what he did to fit in. Now with him, he also had the allergy, right? I think most people, if you look back into your family genetics, there's probably somebody somewhere along the line, right?
Yeah, more than likely, yeah.
When we were going through this, I was so naive to understand that thought. My husband's family that has a lot of drug use and alcoholism. So I blamed him. If I didn't marry you, this wouldn't have happened to my beautiful boy.
Wow.
That's another hole.
Oh, bad parenting, right?
That's another hole.
Yeah, I'll bet. So, may I ask, how are you and your son today?
Wonderful. He is, I think it's coming up. Well, he got sober in 2008 on Mother's Day.
Wow.
On Mother's Day. Yep. So what's it? 16 years. I'm terrible with math. Quick in my head. 14 years, something like that. And highly successful. You know, I had sent him a letter when he was in active addiction and said, if you could put as much effort into getting drugs and getting high, into living life and being successful, you will be an incredible human being.
Sure.
And today that's what he does. You know, he owns a business with his brother, his younger brother, whom I never thought the two of them would ever have a relationship with because he stole from him and lied from him. And siblings really can do tough love like nobody's business. Very different. They can do it much better than parents can. So I never thought they would speak. And now they are best of friends. So they, you know, they have a business together. They do investments together. And yeah, my son, you know, he's married. He has three little beautiful baby boys and a wonderful wife. And he lives a great life today.
Wow. Wow. What a gift. That's tremendous. So where's the people that are going, good parenting? Where are those folks?
Well, you know what? They're nowhere to be found. And what irritates me is I had some interviews with local TV stations. And the last TV interview, I said to the journalist, I said, why don't you do a series on somebody like my son? You know, why don't you show the miracles and the success stories instead of somebody, you know, lying on a street with a needle hanging out of their arm?
Right.
And he said, well, that doesn't sell.
Yeah. And Roger, that is why I am so glad that Take 12 Recovery Radio isn't about all that stuff, right? I'm so thankful. Early on, we had some offers, Donna, from some pretty powerful people, and I knew in my gut we're going to be selling out if we do that. There was a guy from MetLife. There was a guy from E! News. I mean, and I was like, wow. I mean, I saw glory lights, right? And I was like, yeah, we got to go. We can't do this. We cannot do this. And yeah. I hear you.
Yeah, and I never did another interview after that. I was done. And I just went on my own way, and I found my way. Good for you.
Yeah. Now, so let's fast forward a little bit. You got a lot of credentials. You got a lot of stuff that you are doing. I mean, you're an accomplished author. You host this podcast. You speak. You do. I mean, my goodness, girl, you're just knocking it out of the park. What drives you to be of such service to others like this?
Because I never want always makes me cry. Oh. I never want another parent to feel so emotionally depleted as I did. And if I can save them that, you know, I was emotionally and financially depleted.
Yeah.
And if I can save somebody from that heartache, then that's my mission. You know, I always tell people I've taken what was once my mess and they made it my message.
Yeah.
I know how painful it is to watch your child. And we're when our children are in active addiction or alcoholism, I round it all into addiction. It's all the same.
Sure.
We're watching our kids kill themselves.
Yeah.
Slow. It's a slow death. And there's nothing, as I said, I couldn't love my son into recovery. And it took a very long time to understand that. It's like we become human pretzels. We're always trying to please them. And so then we're told we're codependent and we're enablers. And I hate that language because they're shaming and blaming me and other parents for loving our children so much that we'll sell our soul to the devil to so they can live a healthy, happy life, right?
Yeah.
And so I just never want anyone to feel that way. I've changed some of the language. When I talk to a parent, instead of saying, you know, you're codependent when you bail your child out of jail, and I'm talking teen adults, I don't care how old, right? I prefer to say, call it unhealthy helping. Because then I'm not putting people on the defensive. They're not feeling shamed for loving their child. Let's talk about how we can put some other things together, some boundaries together that's a win-win. How do you get into be able to be in your child's life mm-hmm. when they're sick and suffering, and that you can have somewhat of a healthier relationship? And it's by setting boundaries. And so there's all kinds of tools that I teach, and those credentials, I'll tell you how that came about. So this is my being Italian Irish girl. I started running family support groups. Oh God, I don't even remember. It's like 12 years ago, 12, 14 years ago. And this woman came up to me and she said, what are your credentials? And I said, I'm a mother. I've lived this. Hey. I've experienced it. There's nothing like life experience. And she walked away.
Wow.
And I thought, I will never feel that way again.
Yeah.
I took every class I could. I did all kinds of stuff. I became a recovery coach, and I got licensed in the state, and I just got all kinds of stuff. So if anyone said it, I could open this book and go, here you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for you.
Credits me.
Good for you. We're talking to Donna Marston. She is the host of Sharing Without Shame. You can visit the website at sharingwithoutshame.com and listen to her podcast. One of the things that I really love that you start all your podcasts with is you ask your guest, what is it? How do you put it? You say it.
I just say, what would you like to share without shame?
What would you like to share without shame? Yeah. Because there is so much shame attached to a lot of this stuff that we go through, whether it's brought on by our own thinking or by other people or whatever, and we carry it around with us like this big weight. And when we're able to share these things, our pains, our successes, without that burden of that thing beating us up, we have this beautiful blooming story that we can share with people to help them drop their shame too. Isn't that the whole point? Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, I kept my secret. And what I realized is that I was as sick as my secret, as I'm sure, you know, you all know that.
Yeah.
And so as I started to come forward and speak more openly, more parents were going, me too. I have a story.
You bet.
And then I found this community of people who were as sick as I was.
Yeah.
And we all need, and we came together and we moved forward. And I, you know, I just took what I had learned and I put it into action, and I started helping people throughout the state of New Hampshire. And it's been amazing. You know, the gifts I got, and the reason I did it too, I was invited to go on a recovery mission for New Hampshire, and they sent me up to Knoll Farm in Vermont. And it was camping, and I don't camp.
You glamp?
In the woods in a tent with holes in it. And I'm afraid of the woods. You know, it's just like all this stuff. I was so outside my comfort zone. And everybody was in recovery but me. So I wasn't overly received well, right?
Yeah.
Because people in who are in recovery say, you know, you remind us of everything we did wrong.
Oh, God.
I was like, yeah, but I never said anything to you. I'm just loving on you. I don't care what your past was. It is what it is. So anyway, my commitment when I came back was that I would start a family support group.
Mm-hmm.
And I founded Family Sharing Without Shame. And that's how this all evolved.
Wow. Wow. And how long have you been doing all this stuff now?
Oh boy, since 2004. No, he got sober 08 to 2006.
Yeah, my goodness. Roger, comments, questions?
I've just been sitting here listening to Donna, and for someone who is not in AA or NA or one of the A's, not in quote-unquote recovery, you just expressed the actual basis for our program.
Yep.
Which is to get away from shame, guilt, and shame. I mean, we're guilty of what we've done, but there's no shame involved. And it's all about love and being of service. And what you, the way you amply described it, is what we do. Mm-hmm. You're a walking, talking, non-alcoholic AA member, but you don't even know it.
But yes.
Maybe you do.
Well, you know what? So when my son, he was in and out of treatment, but when he finally moved forward, 3 years into his sobriety, he decided to do the steps. So if I'm being open and honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I decided, well, I wanted to make sure, because he decided instead of going with his peers of his age, he wanted to go into the program with older men being his sponsor. He felt sure. That was safer for
mentors,
him.
Mentors, yeah.
And I wanted to make sure, as a controlling, loving mother, that what they were doing was safe. So I found this woman through him. He had said, Mom, you need to meet Betty. So Betty was friends of the guy who started the AA Big Book Step Study meeting in Concord. And his wife took Betty through the steps the way AA did it, not Al-Anon. So I sought her out and I said, I want to know what my son's doing. So she took me through the steps. And I will tell you, it was challenging, but it was the greatest gift I ever gave myself.
Wow.
So, wow.
That's that. So you actually received from that experience, you initially went into it for one reason, but then...
Selfish and self-seeking?
Yeah. But then you got blessed.
Right?
Right.
And
yeah.
Then I bless others.
You know, that sounds a lot. That sounds very familiar to me. My wife decided that she was going, she's never had a drop of anything or a narcotic or anything in her whole life. And she decided she was going to learn that big book. She, you know, I need to know this better than he knows this, mm-hmm. You know, and then she set off to do that. Now she helps other women. You know what I mean? It flips on you.
And that's the love.
Yes. Right?
In the big scheme of things, was it controlling? Maybe, but it was really, really out of love. I wanted to do what he was doing. And to take it even further, my husband and I, we no longer consume any alcohol. We weren't big drinkers. We were social drinkers. But if my son has to live the rest of his life not drinking,
wow,
I'm going to honor that. So my husband and I honor that. And even his brother doesn't really.
Wow.
We've, you know, this has become a family. It really united our family.
You know, let me ask you, Roger. So what Donna just expressed about them giving up drinking, not being alcoholic, not having a problem with alcohol, but just in honor of their son, they put the bottle down, right? Mm-hmm. Now, there are some people within our beloved 12-step fellowships that, Roger, correct me if I'm wrong here, that would really poo-poo that, right? They'd be going, well, why do you think you have to do that? You're not an alcoholic. Why, you shouldn't have to give up something just because he's the horse's patootie, blah, 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 blah. What would you say to them, Roger?
They don't understand the whole concept of love and tolerance and community and
kindness.
That's right. And they don't understand anything about what we're talking about. Those are people that have never embraced what a spiritual awakening is. They don't understand the power of God and the Great Commission to go help somebody else who's less fortunate. They have no concept of that.
Right.
And, you know, it's like Mother Teresa said to the United Nations, if everybody did the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, we would live in a harmonious world. Mm. And I absolutely agree with her. I have a pastor friend who's not an alcoholic who tells his congregation all the time. He talks about me and he talks about the 12 steps. He said everybody should do the 12 steps because it'll change your life.
Yeah,
it's about changing your life. It's not about not drinking. It's not about not drugging. It's about being the man or woman that God created you to be and be of service to somebody else. What a concept.
Yeah.
Where do people learn that? What credential teaches you that, by the way? I know lots of people that are heavily credentialed who don't know anything about what we're talking about.
I know, right?
Right? And then there's a lot of people who don't have credentials but have walked through what Donna has walked through and learn the experience the hard way in life, like I did with my wife. My wife died from alcoholism, so I've been through that. But the shame thing, for whatever reason, even when I didn't have the shame issue because I know what I did and I was accountable and responsible for my actions, and she was accountable for hers.
Mm-hmm.
And while I had played a part in all that, I didn't have shame about it. I was guilty, but I didn't have shame. And that had to be a movement of the Holy Spirit, because I can't explain that. But I heard a lot of other people speak very negatively, like someone that was very close to my wife, about her, and that really pissed me off.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal. I looked really good on the outside, and my people, some of our acquaintances would think I was innocent. Why would she do what she did? And they had no concept of what I did. And that whole work, walking through all of that, was a trial, you know.
Yeah.
But God, His grace and mercy are overwhelming. But I love what you say. I love everything that you've done. Congratulations. God bless you.
I know. It's marvelous. The world is filled with Job's comforters, right? Why didn't you just quit? You know? Why don't you just walk away?
What did you do that got so mad at you, Job?
Curse God and get on with your life, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it cracks me up sometimes, and I know I'm going to get myself into trouble here, but that's all right. I do it all the time. It cracks me up how I cherish my 12-step brothers and sisters, but quit quoting love and tolerance is our code. Quit quoting that if you don't mean it. Stop.
If you stop
tearing people up, start remembering from whence you came. My God, you were that person. Maybe you still are. And you're spouting love and tolerance is our code. And then you're acting like a horse's patootie and treating people less than human because they're trapped in whatever they're trapped in. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to get to preaching here if I'm not careful. This podcast, Sharing Without Shame, share with us some of your experiences of because I know I've got some wild stories of people I've had on the show. I'm sure you've had some very eye-opening experiences with your guests as well.
Actually, it's been, I started it a few years ago and then I had stopped because I'm technically challenged and the guy that was editing quit. So I was like, now what do I do? And I just kind of took a break. And so I came back to it recently. And it's been really good. It's just been, everybody's been great. Everybody's been open and honest and it's ebbs and flows and it's organic. Mm. And, you know, I don't have any crazy stories yet.
Yeah.
Maybe later, but nothing yet.
Right. But it sounds like you've had some wonderful guests on. Any of your favorites?
You know, they're all unique in their own way. And, you know, there's some people that I've met that blow me away. And I think that would be unfair to anybody that wasn't. I like them all. I've enjoyed them all. And they all have a similar message, yet a different message.
And yet unique, right? At the same time.
And, and what I love about it, because when I started this, you know, Sharing Without Shame, you know, it was like all about addiction and recovery. And what I'm realizing as this is taking on a life of its own, I don't have to just talk about just drugs and alcohol.
Right.
There's so much shame. People are shamed for their weight. They're shamed because they're not pretty enough, or they're shamed that they don't have money for nice clothes. This could just spiral out into so many different ways. And if it does, so be it. If it doesn't, and we just stay where we are, I'm fine with that too. I'm being led, right? You know, before I came on with you today, I asked God to lead the way and I'll follow.
Just Amen.
Show me the way.
Amen.
Yeah.
And that's how I do my podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not doing it. I'm being guided.
Yeah. Yeah, we firmly believe in that. Absolutely. This isn't Take 12 Radio's broadcast. This is God's broadcast. This isn't Monty's or Roger's. This is God's thing. And I mean, we what a blessing we get to play a small part in it, and that just blows my mind. So I want to ask you about the terminology surrounded around the word shame. Sometimes, is there ever anything such as appropriate shame?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Okay.
I don't either.
I don't either,
but I heard somebody say, or I read it somewhere, something about, well, you know that shame when your mom comes into your room and it's a mess and she says, have you no shame? Look at this room, right? That's an example of good shame. And I thought, is it? Is it? I mean, is there?
I don't think shame is the right word. You're guilty of having a messy room, so clean it up. But what does that have to do with shame?
But I've heard now my parents never said that like that. But I've heard that there are parents that have, or people say, you know, have you no shame? Put some clothes on. I mean, I look at. I'm going to pick on a halftime show. any of the halftime shows as of the last 10 years. And I'm kind of like, I'm looking at the TV going, have you no shame? You know, put your clothes back on. but I'm saying that kind of tongue in cheek. But I think people say that sometimes and think that that's the proper use of the word shame. And I just don't know if there's ever a proper use of the word shame.
I don't think so. And I think, you know, I think some of the words are generational.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like when you get into the older people, like in the 80s and 90s, you know, I did a piece, a blog on the evolution of addiction, and starting with my mom's 95, that age group,
mm-hmm.
you know, don't create waves. And then you have the baby boomers, children can be seen, but not heard. You know, then it goes down. And as you get to the younger generation, they're much more open about stuff. But I think some of that phrasing is generational.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get to the younger generations, they don't use language like that. I just think it evolves. And hopefully people aren't doing that sort of type of conversations.
Is there a danger of us going too far the other way, though? To where there's no boundaries and there's no, you know what I mean? Because I'm seeing some things being normalized that I think are very unhealthy.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think in some cases, I think, you know, I think we have to be mindful of how we say stuff. And,
yeah.
you know, what's the matter with you? You don't have any, what did you say? You don't have any shame, get dressed or something like that.
Right, right.
Like, hey, you know, you being naked makes me a little uncomfortable. Would you mind putting some clothes on? I think it's, you know.
Yeah, that's not shaming.
Right.
Right.
It's just saying, I think identifying our feelings, this is how I feel. It's making me uncomfortable. Would you mind to,
mm-hmm.
to you know, do it a little different?
So what I hear you saying, it's all in the approach.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, if we could learn that. Just a simple thing, just the way we even say good morning. You know, I mean, if Marcia wakes up and her hair is all ratted and I go, oh my gosh, you should look in the mirror. That's a horrible thing to say. She's going to punch me.
I'm like that. And my husband goes, you are so beautiful. He's so full of it. Right. But that's the loving and kind thing. But I know I'm a mess.
Right.
When I wake up.
Right.
You know, I think here's one of the things that I want to bring up, if I may.
Sure.
And you might all think I'm crazy, but I think a lot of people who have a substance use disorder or an alcohol use disorder are impasse or empathic. I feel, especially men.
Explain to our listeners what that means, empathic.
Empathic means that they're sensitive to people's feelings, to what's said to them.
They can pick up on things better, easier.
No, I don't know if it's easier, but so I'm an empath. An empath, I feel, I can walk in a room and I can feel the energy of somebody. If they're really sad, it makes me sad and I will cry with them. You know, I take on some of those feelings.
Gotcha.
And being empathic, it's just that they're sensitive. They're not necessarily taking on the feelings, if that makes sense. Hmm. And I think a lot of people who suffer from an SUD, a substance use disorder, are empaths or empathic. And I think it's been particularly hard for men, especially the older generations, and even my son's generation. Boys aren't supposed to cry. You're supposed right. to hold yourself together. You're supposed to be tough. Get it together, man, right? And I'll never forget one time my husband said to my son, don't cry, you're a boy. And I was like, cry, go right. ahead, cry, let it out. Yeah. That's how we express our feelings, some of us.
Yeah.
But I just think, you know, and so people don't know how to handle those emotions, so they self-medicate.
Yes. I can see that. I can absolutely see that, especially if you have a genetic disposition to be your metabolism's allergic to a substance. You don't even know it until you first put it in your body. You know, I mean, the reason I took my very first drink was so I could be 10 feet tall and bulletproof at the school dance.
Hmm.
Because
I think that's common.
Yes, because I was shamed for being the little fat kid. Right. In ways that were like, you know, not, you know, being picked last for this team or that team, or, you know, okay, well, you're going to have to be in a special ed physical fitness class versus these guys, which I did need to be, you know, but the way it was handled. And so I went through a lot of feeling horrible about myself. And I saw my dad come home from work, a very stressful job that he had, come home from work. And pour himself a Christian Brothers and Brandy and Seven. He never finished it. He'd just take a few sips on it, and it relaxed him. And I thought, hey, I wonder if that'll work. So I did, and I immediately took a more is better. Even as a junior high school, middle school kid, I got the fact that more is better. So I poured this huge glass, and I just downed it. And then immediately, I was living in my solution. You know, and so I poured another one. And then I went to the school dance and I was awesome. Now,
yes, you were, Monty. I wasn't even there, but I know you were.
I would hate to have been a fly on the wall and report back to what I really was, but at least in my own thinking, I was awesome. And I came to school the next day and I was walking on a cloud, baby. So if that worked that night, it'll work again. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're right. I mean, Donna, I was that guy that thought everybody was supposed to be as sensitive as I was. I couldn't figure out when I, for instance, you know, those SPCA commercials on TV about the cats and dogs that are abandoned. I cannot watch those. There is no, I got to turn the channel. First of all, they're really long and they're meant to be that way. Right. I can't watch them. Early on, while I was drinking and using, if I'd watched one of those things, I would have gotten up, left the room, and ran away and gone to the ocean, or all because of that commercial. I think you're right. I think it is evident. Well, you know what? The Big Book of A doesn't say, Roger, that alcoholics are sensitive people. Doesn't even say that.
100%.
Yeah.
We are sensitive people.
Yeah.
But there's a whole, and I think Donna was talking about the concept of empathy, and it's very different than sympathy. And empathy is, I know how you're feeling because I've walked in your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings community and recovery when we can do that. I know how you're feeling. You know, let me pray for you. I've been where you've been.
Sure.
I know how that feels. That's a whole different thing than I'm sorry that you feel that way.
Right. Yeah.
So that's shaming.
I always ended my meetings. We all held hands and said, "We do the Serenity Prayer. I put my hand in yours, so together we can do what you no longer have to do alone."
Amen.
That's a sense of community, right?
So maybe that's another that empathy that addicts and alcoholics have turned on its head and made for community, and it binds us together.
It does.
And why we're able to say, listen to somebody's story and go, man, I'm you. You know, the first time somebody told me that, I didn't feel alone anymore. They go, I'm you.
Right. Because I can't help you because I haven't walked in your shoes, but that person who helped both of you was empathetic or an empath, they were able to help you.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that the community really talks about it in that spiritual way.
And I think they should, because I think it's in the literature, but we kind of pass over it because, you know, it's controversial. Now we're going to talk about churchy stuff. No, we're not. Come on, give me a break. So one more thing about the empathic thing. I think a lot of people think it's some sort of weird Eastern spiritual, you know, levitation thing or something like that. The way you explained it, though, it's not that at all. Mm-mm. No.
Mm-mm. Oh, it's all here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Heart and soul.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Do you know who's coming up on your next show, by the way?
I think you're going to be on next month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
don't miss that, listeners.
Yeah.
They're going, we get enough of you as it is.
I think maybe April 1st or sometime in April, when you were on Sharing Without Shame will be coming up.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, folks.
That's the one I'm really excited about.
What's that?
Said I'm really excited about that.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah, it's been great getting to know you. And
well, thank
I'm
you.
Honored to be here.
Yeah. No, this has been great. Listeners, Donna Marston is our guest. SharingWithoutShame.com. Please visit the website. If you forget that, simply go to Take12Radio.com and click on our Recovery Podcast Network banner, and we have included Sharing Without Shame amongst those that we have included in our Recovery Network, because this truly is a form of recovery, recovering our true self, as Dr. Berger would say, recovering without shame, leaving that behind and moving forward. So please visit the website sharingwithoutshame.com, and there you can download and listen to Donna's podcast for fun and for free. Is there a way listeners could help you financially? I know a lot of people don't like to talk about that, but it costs money to do these kind of things. Can they donate to you?
Sure. Yeah. They can. One of the ways too is I have a sponsor. Actually, it's these. These are really cool. It's a
nice.
It's a leather band, and mine says blessing on it, and it's Snap Therapy. And it's for mental health, anxiety, all different kinds of things. You know, kids today in school. And when you're snapping it, no one knows that you're snapping it. So I have a tendency to snap it. But it's for like OCD and anxiety and all different types of things. So it's called Snap Bands. And he's my sponsor. He sponsors my show.
Oh, cool.
And so when people buy a Snap Band, I get 20% of the sale.
Oh, nice.
So it's helping me pay for my my programming and my editing and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Ah, good deal. Please, listeners, visit sharingwithoutshame.com. Get to know Donna. And what I would like you to do, now you've got a couple of books out there too, right?
Four books.
Four
my
books.
My original was Peeling the Onion.
Peeling the Onion.
My story of my pain, pretty much, of what I went through mm-hmm. and what I learned. And then I did a Just for Today. That's just a daily read.
Uh-huh.
You know, a little saying every day about addiction and codependency and
All that stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff. And then the one I'm probably the most proud of is my book, Sharing Without Shame. That's a little bit of chicken soup for the soul, I think.
Yeah.
So I have six parents, including myself, who wrote how they navigated through their teen or adult child's active addiction.
Wow.
And then I have six people who are in recovery, and they talk about their pathway.
Nice.
And then there's some other stuff. And you know, about coping skills and things like that. And then I wrote Healing Without Shame, because that's a journal that goes with Sharing Without Shame.
So listeners, this is what I would recommend. Get one or more of those, and then get another one so you can give away to a friend. I'm going to start telling people that when I have authors on. I've got a good friend who's in radio that says that all the time. Buy one for you, buy one for somebody else.
Great gifts.
Yeah, yeah, because this stuff is all great stuff. Again, sharingwithoutshame.com. Roger, closing thoughts or questions?
Well, this has been a delight. I think that your books and your subject and your life speak deeply to everyone's life issues. I mean, I think everybody deals with these kinds of things. And the concept of everything that you've mentioned is a blessing. Very much so.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to meet you. I look forward to getting your book. I want one of your snap bands. Yeah, all those things. So God bless you. I look forward to your podcast and so forth.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, cool deal. Donna, any closing thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
You know, just basically, if anybody is going through what I went through and they don't know where to turn, to reach out to me. And I do a 15 to 20 minute free consultation. But I do coaching, and I help parents navigate through their child's active addiction.
Mm.
And they can just reach me through my email, my website.
Yeah, so listeners, if you're experiencing and you're a little tired of people, well-meaning friends, that are saying things to you like, you know, maybe you've just been a bad parent. Maybe you're being codependent. Maybe blah, 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 blah. And you'd like some positive reinforcement and be able to walk through some of these difficult things without shame, please get a hold of Donna. Sharingwithoutshame.com is the website. Thank you so much for being on our show, Donna. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Thank you. I'm so honored. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. All right, listeners, the lineup for this week. Okay, tomorrow's show on the Came to Believe Recovery podcast, the topic is, we wish everyone would do the steps. That'll be with Tom Williams and Alicia Martinez and myself. And then on Wednesday, the Monty Man's Recovery Meditorial. The topic is chasing them down when they're chasing the dragon. That'll be about a 4 to 7 minute meditorial for you on Wednesday. And on Friday, walking through the language of the heart, Bill W.'s Grapevine Writings from 1944 to 1970. The article, God as We Understand Him, The Dilemma of No Faith. And that's with my good mentor and friend, Chris S. and myself. So that's the lineup for this week. Thank you so much to my co-host, Roger McDermott. Thank you to my guest, Donna Marston. The website, once again, sharingwithoutshame.com. Well, my friends, until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with the rest of the Take 12 Recovery Radio family, and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.